Next, I'm going to read Chapter 3, Theseus and the Minotaur. Thereafter, Theseus made up his mind to go search of his father, the unknown king, and Medea, the wise woman, counseled him to go to Athens. After the hunt in Calydon, he set forth. On his way, he fought with and slew two robbers who harassed countries and cheated people unjustly. The first was Cineas. He was a robber who slew men cruelly by tying them to strong branches of trees and letting the branches fly apart. On him, Theseus had no mercy. The second was a robber also, Procrustes. He had a great iron bed on which he made his captives lie. If they were too long for that bed, he chopped pieces off them, and if they were too short, he stretches out their bodies with terrible racks. On him likewise, Theseus had no mercy. He slew Procrustes and gave liberty to his captives. The king of Athens at the time was named Aegeus. He was the father of Theseus, but neither Theseus nor he knew that was so. Aethra was his mother, and she was the daughter of King Troezen. Before Theseus was born, his father left a great sword under a stone, telling Aethra that the boy was to have the sword when he was able to move that stone away. King Aegeus was told and fearful now that there were wars and troubles in the city. Besides, there was in his palace an evil woman, a witch, to whom the king listened. This woman heard that a proud and fearless young man had come into Athens, and she at once thought to destroy him. So the witch spoke to the fearful king, and she made him believe that this stranger had come into Athens to make league with his enemies and destroy him. Such was her power over Aegeus that she was able to persuade him to invite the stranger youth to feast in the palace and to give him a cup that would have poison in it. Theseus came into the palace. He sat down to the banquet with the king. But before the cup was brought, something moved him to stand up and draw forth the sword that he carried. Fearfully, the king looked upon the sword. Then he saw the heavy ivory hilt with the curious carving on it, and he knew that it was the sword that he had once laid under the stone near the palace of the king of Troezen. He questioned Theseus how he had come by his sword, and Theseus told him how Aethra, his mother, had shown it to him, where it was hidden, and how he had been able to take it from under the stone before he had grown a youth. More and more Aegeus questioned him, and he came to know that the youth before him was his son indeed. He dashed down the cup that had been brought to the table, and he shook all over with thoughts of how near he had been to a terrible crime. The witch woman watched all that passed. Mounting on a car drawn by dragons, she made flight from Athens. And now the people of the city, knowing that it was he who had slain the robbers, Cineas and Procrustes, they rejoiced to have Theseus amongst them. When he appeared as their prince, they rejoiced still more. Soon he was able to bring an end to the wars in the city and the troubles that afflicted Athens. The greatest king in the world at that time was Minos, the king of Crete. Minos had sent his son to Athens to make peace and friendship between the kingdom of King Aegeus, but the people of Athens slew the son of King Minos, and because Aegeus had not given him the protection that a king would have given a stranger come upon such an errand, he was demanded to have some part of guilt of his slaying. Minos, the great king, was worth, and he made war on Athens wreaking great destruction upon the country and the people. Moreover, the gods themselves were wroth with Athens. They punished the people with famine, making even the rivers dry up. The Athenians went to the oracle to ask Apollo what they should have to do, to have their guilt taken away. Apollo made answer that they should make peace with Minos and fulfill all his demands. All this Theseus now heard, learning for the first time that behind the wars and troubles of Athens, there was a deed of evil that Aegeus, his father, had some guilt in. The demands of King Minos made upon Athens were terrible. He demanded that the Athenians would send into Crete every year 7 youths and 7 maidens as a price for the life son. And these youths and maidens were not to meet death merely, nor were they to be reared in slavery. They were to be sent to that a monster called the Minotaur might devour them. Youths and maidens had been sent for a third time. The messengers and King Minos were coming to Athens. The tribute of the Minotaur was to be chosen by the lot. The fathers and mothers were in fear and trembling, for each man and woman thought that this his or her son or daughter would be taken for a prey for the Minotaur. They came together, the people of Athens, and they drew the lots fearfully. On the throne above them all sat their pale-faced Aegeus, father of Theseus. Before the first lot was drawn, Theseus turned to all of them and said, "People of Athens, it is not right that your children should go, and that I, who am son of the king Aegeus, should remain behind. Surely any of the youths of Athens should face the dread monster of Crete. I should face it. There is one lot that you may leave undrawn. I will go to Crete." His father, on hearing the speech of Theseus, came down from his throne and pleaded with him, begging him not to go. But the will of Theseus was set. He would go with the others and face the Minotaur. And he reminded his father of how the people had complained, saying that if Aegeus had done the duty of a king, Minos' son would not have been slain of the tribute, and the tribute of the Minotaur would have not been demanded. It was the passing about of such complaints had led to the war and troubles and that Theseus found on his coming to Athens. Also, Theseus told his father and told the people that he had hope in his hands, that the hands that were strong enough to slay Cyneus and poor Crestes, the giant robbers, should be strong enough to slay the dread monster of Crete. His father at last consented to his going, and Theseus was able to make the people willing to believe that he would be able to overcome the Minotaur, so he put an end to that terrible tribute that was being exacted from him. With 6 other youths and 7 maidens, Theseus went on board of the ship that every year brought to Crete and a grievous tribute. This ship always sailed with black sails. But before it sailed this time, King Aegeus gave to Nausithous, the master of the ship, a white sail to take with him. And he begged Theseus that in case he should be able to overcome the monster, to hoist the white sail he had given. Theseus promised he would do this. His father would watch for a return to the ship, and if the sail were black, he would know that the Minotaur had dealt with his son as it had dealt with the other youths who had gone from Athens. And if the sail were white, Aegeus would have indeed cause to rejoice. And now the black-sailed ship had come to Crete, and the youths and maidens of Athens looked from its deck, Knossos, the marvelous city that Daedalus, the builder, built for King Minos. They saw the palace of the king, red and black palace, in which was a labyrinth made also by the eldest, where the dread Minotaur was hidden. In fear, they looked upon the city and the palace. But not in fear did Theseus look, but in wonder and magnificence of it all. The harbor, with its great steps leading up to the city, far-spreaded palace, all red and black, and crowds of ships with their white and red sails. They were brought through the city of Knossos to the palace of the king, and there Theseus looked upon Minos, in a great red chamber on which was painted the sign of an axe. King Minos sat on a low throne. He sat, holding his hand a scepter on which a bird was perched. Not in fear, but steadily did Theseus look upon the king. He saw that Minos had the face of one who has thought long upon troublesome things, that his eyes were strangely dark and deep. The king noted the eyes of Theseus were upon him, and he made a sign with his head to an attendant, and the attendant laid his hand upon him and brought Theseus to stand before the king. Minos questioned him as to who he was and what lands he had been in, and when he learned that Theseus was the son of Aegeus, son of Athens, and he said the same name of his son who had been slain, Androgeus over again, as then spoke no more. While he stood there beside the king, there came into the chamber three maidens. One of them, Theseus knew, was the daughter of Minos. Not like the maidens of Greece were the princesses of his two attendants. Instead of having on flowing garments and sandals, wearing their hair bound, they had on dresses of gleaming material that were tight at their waists, and bell-shaped. Their hair that streamed on their shoulders was made wavy. They had high shoes of a substance that shone like glass. Never had Theseus looked upon maidens who were so strange. They spoke to the king in a strange speaking language. When Minos' daughter made reference to her father, they went from the chamber. Theseus watched them as they went through the long passage, walking slowly on their high-heeled shoes. Though the same passage the youths and maidens of Athens were afterward brought, they came into a great hall. The walls were red on them, and were paintings in black, pictures of great bulls and with girls, slender youths struggling with them. It was the place for games and shows, and Theseus stood with the youths and maidens of Athens, and with the people of the palace watched what was happening. They saw women charming snakes. Then they saw a boxing match. Then afterward they all looked on a bout of wrestling. Theseus looked past the wrestlers, and he saw at the other end of the hall the daughter of King Minos and her two attendant maidens. The one broad-shouldered and bearded man overthrew all the wrestlers who came to grips with them. He stood there boastfully, and Theseus was made angry by the man's arrogance. Then, when no other wrestler would come against him, he turned to leave the arena. But Theseus stood in his way and pushed him back. The boastful man laid hands upon him and pulled him into the arena. He strove to throw Theseus as he had thrown the others, but he soon found that the youth from Greece was a wrestler too, and that he would have strived hard to overthrow him. More eagerly than they had watched anything else, and the people of the palace and the youths and maidens of Athens watched the bout between Theseus and the lordly wrestler. Those from Athens who looked upon him now thought that they had never seen Theseus look so tall and so conquering before. beside the slender, dark-haired people of Crete. He looked like a statue of one of the gods. Very adroit was the Cretan wrestler, and Theseus had to use all his strength to keep upon his feet, but soon he mastered the tricks that the wrestler was using against him. Then the Cretan left aside his tricks and began to use all his strength to throw Theseus. Steadily, Theseus tore at the Cretan wrestler and was spent and gasping in efforts to throw him. Then Theseus made him feel his grip. He bent backward, and then, using all his strength suddenly, forced him to the ground. All were filled with wonder at the strength and power of this youth from the overseas. Food and wine were given the youths and maidens of Athens, and they, with Theseus, were let wander through the grounds of the palace. But they could make no escape, for guards followed them, and the way to the ships was filled with strangers who could not let them pass. They talked to each other about the Minotaur, and there was fear in every word they said. But Theseus went from one to the other, telling them that perhaps there was a way by which he could come to the monster and destroy it. And the youths and maidens, remembering how he had overthrown the worthy wrestler, were comforted a little, thinking that Theseus might indeed be able to destroy the Minotaur to save all of them. Theseus was awakened by someone touching him. He rose and saw a dark-faced servant who beckoned to him. He left the little chamber where he had been sleeping, and he saw outside one who wore a strange dress of the Cretans. And Theseus looked full upon her and saw that she was none other than the daughter of King Minos. "I'm Aridine," she said, "and oh, youth of Greece, I have come to save you from the dread of the Minotaur." He looked upon Aridine's strange face with its long dark eyes, and he wondered how this girl could think that she could save him. And save the youths and maidens of Athens from the Minotaur. Her hand rested upon his arm, and she led him to a chamber where Minos sat. It was lighted now by many lamps. "I will show you a way of escape to you," said Aridine. Then Theseus looked around. He saw that none of the other youths and maidens were near him, and he looked on Aridine again, and he saw that the strange princess had been wont to help him, and to help him only. "Who will show the way to escape to the others?" "Ah," said Princess Aridine, "where the others is no way to escape." "Then," said Theseus, "I will not leave the youths and maidens of Athens, who came with me to Crete, and devoured by the Minotaur." "Ah, Theseus," said Aridine, "they cannot escape the Minotaur. One may escape, and I want you to be that one. I saw you when you wrestled with Deucalion, our great wrestler. Since you then, I had longed to save you." "I have come to slay the Minotaur," said Theseus, "and cannot hold my life as my own until I have slain it." Said Aridine, "If you could see the Minotaur, Theseus, and if you could measure its power, you know that you are not the one to slay it. I think only that Talus, that giant who was all of bronze, would have slain the Minotaur." "Princess," said Theseus, "can you help me to come to the Minotaur and look upon it, so I can know for certainly whether this hand of mine can slay the monster?" "I can help you to come to the Minotaur and look upon it," said Aridine. "Then help me, princess," cried Theseus. "Help me to come to the Minotaur and look upon it, and help me, too, to get back the sword that I brought with me to Crete. Your sword will not avail you against the Minotaur." parts of that dream. When you look upon the monster, you will know that it is not your hand, just like. Oh, but bring me my sword, princess, cried Theseus, and his hands went out to her in supplication. I will bring you your sword, said she. She took up a little lamp and went through the doorway, leaving Theseus standing by the low throne of the Chamber of Minos. And after a little while, she came back, bringing with her Theseus' great ivory-hilted sword. This is a great sword, she said. I marked it before because it is your sword, Theseus. But even this great sword will not avail against the Minotaur. Show me the way to come to the Minotaur, O Eridan. Eridan, cried Theseus. He knew that she did not think that he would deem himself able to strife with the Minotaur, and that when he looked upon the dread monster, he would return to her and then would take his way of escape. He took his hand and led him from the Chamber of Minos. She was not tall, but she stood straight and walked steadily, and Theseus saw in her something of a strange majesty that he had seen in Minos the king. They came to a high bronze gate that opened into a vault. Here, said Adrian, the labyrinth begins. Very devious is the labyrinth, built by Geildus, in which the Minotaur is hidden, and without a clue none could find a way through the passages. But I will give you the clue that you may look upon the Minotaur, and then come back to me. Theseus, now I put in your hand the thread that will guide you through the windings of the labyrinth. And outside that the palace where the Minotaur is, you will find another thread to guide you back. A comb was on the ground, and it had a thread fastened to it. Adrian gave Theseus the thread and the comb to wind around it. The thread, as he held it and wound it around the cone, would bring him through all the windings and turnings of the labyrinth. So she left him, and Theseus went on, winding the thread around the cone. He went along the wide passage in the vault. He turned and came to a passage that was very long. He came to the place in this passage where a door seemed to be, but within the frame of a doorway where there was only a blank wall. But below that doorway was a flight of 6 steps, down these steps was where the thread led him. On he went, and he crossed the marks that he gave himself that made in the thrust in the dust, and he thought he might have come back to the place where he had parted from Eridan. He went on, and he saw before him a flight of steps. The thread did not lead up the steps. It led into the most winding of passages. So sudden were the turnings in it that one could not see 3 steps before one. He was dazed by the turnings of this passage, but still he went on. He went up the winding steps, and then along the narrow wall, and overhung a broad flight of steps, and Theseus had to jump to them. Down the steps he went into a wide, empty hall that had doorways to the right hand and to the left hand. Here the thread had its end. It was fastened to a cone that lay to the ground, and beside this cone was another. The clue was to bring him back. Now Theseus, knowing he was in the very center of the labyrinth, looked all around for the sight of the Minotaur. There was no sight of the monster here. He went to all the doors and pushed at them, and some opened and some remained fast. The middle door was opened, and as it did, Theseus felt around him a chilling draft of air. That chilling draft was the breathing of the monster. Theseus then saw the Minotaur. It lay on the ground, a strange bull-faced thing. Then, when the thought came into Theseus that he had to fight that monster alone, and in that hidden and empty place, all the light left him, and he grew like a stone. He groaned, and it seemed to him that he heard the voice of Adrian calling him back. He could find his way back through the labyrinth and come to her. He stepped back, and the door closed on the Minotaur and the dread monster of Crete. An instant, Theseus pushed the door again. He stood within the hall where the Minotaur was, and the heavy door shut behind him. He looked again at that dark, bull-faced thing. It reared up as a horse rears, and Theseus saw that it would crash down on him and tear him with its dragon claws. With a great bound, he went far away from where the monster crashed down. Then Theseus faced it. He saw its thick lips and its slobbering mouth, and saw that its skin was thick and hard. He drew near the monster, his sword in his hand. He struck at its eyes, and his sword made a great dint. But no blood came, and the Minotaur was a bloodless monster. From its mouth and nostrils came a draft that covered him with a chilling slime. When it rushed upon him and overdrew him, Theseus felt its terrible weight upon him. But he thrust his sword upward, and it reared up again, screaming with pain. Theseus drew himself away, and then he saw it searching around and around, and he knew that he made it sightless. Then it faced him. All and the more fearful it was because from its wounds no blood came. Anger flowed into Theseus when he saw the monster standing frightfully before him. He thought of all the youths and maidens that this bloodless thing had destroyed, and all the youths and maidens that it would destroy if he did not slay it now. Angrily he rushed upon it with his great sword. It clawed and tore him, and it opened wide its most evil mouth as if to draw him into it. But again he sprang at it. He thrust his great sword through its neck, and he left his sword there. With the last of his strength, he pulled open the heavy door, and he went out of the hall where the Minotaur was. He picked up the thread and began to wind it. He wound it as he had wound the other thread on his way down. On he wound through passage after passage, through chamber after chamber. His mind was dizzy. He had little thought of the way he was going. His wounds and the chill that the monster had breathed into him, and his horror of the fearful and bloodless thing made his mind almost forsaken. He kept the thread in his hand, and he wound it as he went on through the labyrinth. He stumbled, and the thread broke. He went on for a few steps, and then went back to find the thread that had fallen out of his hands. In an instant, he was in a part of the labyrinth that he had not seen before. He walked a long way, and then he came to his own footmarks as they crossed themselves in the dust. He pushed open a door and came into the air. He was now by the outside of the wall of the palace, and he saw birds flying by him. He leant against the wall of the palace, thinking that he would strive no more to find his way to the labyrinth. So that was the end of part 5 of chapter 3.
Bye guys, see you later. See you later, see you later, see ya.